Hey neighbors, welcome back to the Deep Dive.
It's good to be back.
Today we're diving deep into some really thought-provoking ideas,
Definitely.
all about this concept called, have you heard of this agorism?
Yeah, I have.
Agorism. Now, I know it might sound a little academic at first, but trust me, it gets really interesting, especially when we start to think about, our lives here
Yay.
in Deer Park, LaPorte, Pasadena.
Absolutely, yeah.
So what we've got is a collection of writings
Yeah.
from this journal called Agorism in the 21st Century. A real mix of stuff from the foreword, the basic introduction, to pieces by Jayaclara Breck,
Oh, yeah, great writer.
Nick Land, have you heard of him?
Oh, for sure.
Amy Ireland and Harry Halpin. They're all exploring this idea of a world where individuals operate outside the control of the state.
Yeah, it's a pretty radical idea when you think about it.
It is kind of like a vision of radical freedom,
You
you
know?
know? So let's break this down a little bit for our listeners. Imagine a world where you're living, working completely outside of government control.
Right.
That's the core idea behind agorism.
Like, no taxes, no
No
regulations.
taxes, no regulations.
Total shift
Total shift.
in how we think about society.
Yeah, and what's fascinating is how this philosophy, which has been around for a while, is finding new relevance today. Especially with, all this stuff about cryptocurrency and these decentralized technologies.
Yeah, I mean, you think about it, these ideas, could they actually offer solutions to some of the challenges we face
Yeah.
right here in our own communities?
Right.
It's a big question.
Yeah. So to even start to answer that, we need to understand the core principles of agorism.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the key concept here is this thing called counter-economics. Counter-economics. What's that all about?
So it's essentially the idea of engaging in black market activity,
Okay.
not just for like personal gain,
Right.
but as a strategic way to weaken the state's control.
So like what you're talking about, like smuggling,
Yeah, like smuggling,
tax evasion.
tax
Like I'm
evasion.
not paying my taxes.
Yeah, I mean, these activities, they happen outside the traditional systems of regulation and taxation.
Right.
You're creating this parallel autonomy
Oh, okay.
that challenges the state's power.
So it's almost like a form of like economic rebellion in a way.
Yeah, I mean, think about it.
But doesn't that sound a little dangerous?
I mean, it can be,
Yeah.
and we need to definitely be mindful of the potential risks,
Right.
but the idea is that by participating in these alternative economic systems, individuals can reclaim their economic power,
Right.
create a more decentralized society.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I see. So it's not just about breaking the law, but about building something new
Yeah.
alongside the existing system.
Alongside, yeah,
Okay.
that's a great way to put it.
Okay, that's helpful. So one of the key thinkers behind agorism,
Yeah.
Samuel Edward Konkin III.
Yeah, Konkin.
This guy, Konkin, he actually laid out a roadmap for how this transition could happen. He called it phases of an agorist society.
Right, phases.
Like levels in a video game.
Like levels in a video game.
Kind of, yeah.
He envisioned it starting with small counter-economic communities,
Okay.
almost like underground markets
Right.
or barter
So
systems.
people would start trading goods and services
Exact.
outside of the traditional economy.
Yeah.
Kind of like what we're seeing with the growing popularity of farmers markets
Yeah, farmer's market.
and local exchange trading systems.
Lettuce, yeah.
Have you heard of these?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
So, and as these communities grow and connect, they start to erode the state's power,
Right.
potentially leading to a full-blown agorist society
Okay.
where the state has very little control over people's lives.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's a pretty radical vision.
It is.
Is it
I
realistic?
don't know. It's a big question.
I mean, can we really imagine a world without governments
It's tough.
or traditional economic systems?
Yeah.
What's interesting is that some of these agorist ideas are starting to play out in unexpected ways,
Right.
especially with the rise of cryptocurrencies.
Yeah.
Crypto.
Crypto.
How does that fit in?
Well, Konkin actually wrote about a counter-economy
This guy.
thriving on anonymous markets enabled by encryption technology back in the 1980s.
Wow.
It's almost like he
He was
predicted
ahead of his time.
the rise of things like Bitcoin,
Right.
darknet markets.
Oh, he saw this coming
Yeah.
decades ago.
Decades ago.
That's pretty amazing.
It is.
But isn't crypto mostly used by tech-savvy folks,
Oh, yeah.
investors?
Sure.
How does that relate to like everyday people
Well, that's a good
and
question.
in our communities?
You know, one of the core principles of agorism is that it's not just about the technology, it's about using the tools available
Okay.
to create a more free and decentralized society.
So it's about adapting these ideas to our local context.
Absolutely.
Finding ways to use crypto, other technologies to empower our communities.
Right. Okay. Exactly.
And one of the most exciting developments in the crypto space is the rise of these decentralized autonomous organizations.
Right.
DAOs.
DAOs, yeah.
For short.
Yeah.
DAOs.
So think of them as online communities that use blockchain technology to manage resources, make decisions in a decentralized way. They're like digital cooperatives where members have a direct say in how things are run.
That sounds intriguing.
It is.
And you're saying this has connections to Agorithm?
Absolutely. Konkin's vision of new libertarian alliances,
right,
these groups working together to create a counter-economy, aligns really well with how DAOs function.
I see.
They both emphasize bottom-up organization,
okay,
individual empowerment.
Okay, now it's starting to click.
Yeah.
So could we see DAOs popping up in Deer Park, LaPorte, or Pasadena, working on local issues?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely possible.
Oh, wow.
Imagine a DAO dedicated to revitalizing a local park. Or one that supports small businesses,
right,
in the area.
In the area.
The potential is there,
right,
for communities to come together and use these tools to create positive change.
That's pretty inspiring. But we have to be realistic, right?
Yeah, of course.
I mean, not everyone is comfortable with technology.
Yeah.
And some folks might be wary of anything that sounds too radical.
Sure.
How do we bridge that gap?
That's a good question. I think one of the things that Jerry Clara Brick points out,
okay,
one of the writers in our source material,
right,
is that we need to be mindful of how markets themselves,
okay,
even alternative ones,
right,
can be both liberating and coercive.
Coercive. What do you mean by that?
Well, she argues that markets, even those outside of government control, can become systems of control in their own right.
Hmm.
They can create dependencies, reinforce inequalities.
I see.
Even limit people's choices.
So even when we're trying to build something new,
yeah,
we need to be careful not to replicate the same power dynamics,
yeah,
limitations,
yeah, for sure,
of the old system.
Right.
Right.
We need to be mindful of the potential for unintended consequences, make sure that these new systems are truly serving the needs of our communities.
So it's about finding that balance between individual freedom,
yeah,
and collective responsibility.
Yeah, that's a great way to summarize it.
Okay.
That leads us to another fascinating concept that Nick Land,
oh, yeah,
another writer we're exploring,
okay,
brings to the table: cold anarchy.
Cold anarchy.
Yeah.
What's that all about?
Well, it's a way of understanding the world as being in a constant state of disintegration and reassembly. Power, in this view, doesn't reside in centralized institutions like governments,
okay,
but in the ever-shifting relationships and networks between individuals and groups.
So it's less about overthrowing the system, more about recognizing that the system is already in flux, constantly evolving.
Exactly. Think about it. We're already seeing this play out in the world around us. Global trade networks, the internet, even the way information spreads through social media, these are all examples of decentralized systems operating beyond the control of any single entity.
Wow. When you put it that way, it's like we're already living in a form of cold anarchy without even realizing it.
And that's what makes these agorist ideas so relevant. They're not about creating chaos, but about recognizing the inherent dynamism of complex systems, finding ways to navigate that complexity in a way that empowers individuals and communities.
So it's about being adaptable, resourceful,
yeah,
maybe even a little bit rebellious.
That's the spirit.
Okay.
And speaking of adaptability, that brings us to another fascinating idea.
Okay.
From our source material, Amy Ireland's concept of patchwork.
Patchwork, like a quilt.
Yeah, it's a great analogy.
Okay.
Ireland uses patchwork to describe a model for both the future of society and the emergence of artificial intelligence.
Okay, now I'm really intrigued. Tell me more about this patchwork idea.
All right, imagine a world where cities and communities function more like independent nodes, kind of like squares on a quilt, each with their own unique character and way of doing things, but all interconnected and working together as part of a larger network.
So instead of one big centralized system, we have all these diverse communities collaborating and competing, constantly adapting to changing circumstances.
Exactly. And Ireland connects this idea to the work of philosopher Gilles Deleuze and Phoenix Guattari, who talked about smooth and straighted space.
Okay.
Smooth space is all about fluidity, movement, and interconnectedness, while straighted space represents rigid structures and centralized control.
Got it.
Yeah.
So patchwork aligns with that idea of smooth space, a more dynamic and decentralized way of organizing society.
That's right. And what's fascinating is that Ireland sees this patchwork model not just as a way of understanding society, but also as a potential path for the development of artificial intelligence.
AI. How does that fit into the picture?
Well, instead of thinking about AI as some kind of monolithic superintelligence, she suggests that it might emerge as a network of interconnected, specialized agents, kind of like those independent nodes in a patchwork society.
So instead of one giant brain, we might have a whole bunch of smaller, specialized AIs working together.
Exactly. And these AIs could learn and adapt, collectively responding to the needs and challenges of their specific communities.
That's a pretty mind-blowing concept, but it also raises some questions. I mean, if we're talking about a world of patchwork societies and decentralized AI, how do we ensure that everyone benefits? What about the communities or individuals who don't adapt as quickly or who get left behind in this constant state of flux?
Those are crucial questions, and they highlight the ethical considerations that come with these ideas. A patchwork system could potentially exacerbate existing inequalities if we're not careful. We need to think about how to build in mechanisms for fairness, inclusivity, and support for those who might struggle to keep up.
So it's not just about embracing decentralization for its own sake, but about making sure it leads to a more just and equitable society for everyone, right?
Absolutely. And that brings us to another important perspective from our source material, one that focuses specifically on the challenges and opportunities presented by the pandemic.
Right. You mentioned Harry Halpin earlier. He has some pretty thought-provoking ideas about how the pandemic might be accelerating our trajectory towards a world of digital control.
His argument is that the pandemic has forced even the most resistant institutions, governments, schools, businesses to embrace digital technologies in a way they never have before.
And that makes it easier to monitor and control our behavior.
That's his concern. He talks about a potential society of hypercontrol where our movements, interactions, and even our thoughts are constantly tracked and analyzed by algorithms.
Yikes, that sounds a bit dystopian. But you said he also offers some solutions, right? With these crypto anarchist tools like Bitcoin and Mixnets.
Exactly. These technologies offer a way to resist this trend towards digital control and build a more decentralized and privacy-focused future.
So could you remind me how these tools work? I'm still a bit fuzzy on what Mixnets actually do.
Think of them as digital cloaking devices. They scramble your online communications, making it much harder for anyone to track your activity or identify you.
So it's like having a secret conversation in a crowded room. No one can tell who's talking to whom.
That's a great analogy. And Bitcoin, with its decentralized nature and focus on anonymity, can also play a role in creating a more private and secure financial system.
So it's not just about escaping the system altogether, but about using these tools to create a digital world where individuals have more control over their data and their privacy.
Exactly. And Halpin connects this back to agorism by emphasizing the importance of techniques without technology.
Techniques without technology. What does that mean?
He argues that we need to be mindful of the distinction between techniques which empower individuals and technology which can be used for control.
So it's about using technology in a way that serves human needs and values rather than letting it dictate our lives.
That's the idea. It's about reclaiming agency in a world where technology is becoming increasingly pervasive.
That makes a lot of sense. But if we're talking about this global shift towards decentralization and a rejection of traditional power structures, what happens to the existing institutions? Do they just fade away peacefully?
That's a big question, and one that doesn't have a simple answer. It's more likely that we'll see a complex interplay between these emerging decentralized systems and the existing institutions. It's not necessarily about one replacing the other, but about finding new ways to coexist and interact.
So instead of a sudden collapse, we might see a gradual evolution, with power becoming more distributed over time.
That's one possibility, and it's interesting to consider how this might play out differently in different contexts. For example, here in Deer Park LaPorte in Pasadena, we might see local communities taking on more responsibility for things like education, healthcare, and even infrastructure.
So instead of relying solely on the state or federal government, communities could start to self-organize and create their own solutions.
Exactly. And these local initiatives could then connect and collaborate with other communities, forming a kind of patchwork network across the region.
That's a really compelling vision. But how do we get from here to there? What are the practical steps we can take to start building this more decentralized future?
That's where things get really interesting, because it's not just about waiting for some grand revolution to happen. It's about taking action in our own lives and communities right now.
So what can our listeners in Deer Park, LaPorte, and Pasadena do to start putting these ideas into practice?
Well, there are a lot of things folks can do right in their own backyards, you know, even if they're not like tech wizards or political activists.
Yeah, okay. I like the sound of that, practical steps, you know, for everyday people.
Exactly. Remember that idea of counter-economics we talked about?
Mm-hmm.
One of the simplest ways to put that into practice is by supporting local businesses and initiatives.
So shopping at farmers markets.
Yeah. farmers markets.
Joining a community garden.
Community gardens.
Maybe even starting a barter network with your neighbors.
Barter networks, exactly. Those are all great examples of counter-economic activities that build community and create economic resilience outside of that traditional system.
That makes a lot of sense. And what about those DAOs we were discussing? Are there ways for folks to get involved with those at a local level?
Oh, absolutely. There are already DAOs focused on everything from funding community projects to supporting local artists.
So our listeners could join one of those existing DAOs or maybe even start their own.
Exactly. Imagine a DAO dedicated to cleaning up a local park or one that helps fund scholarships for students in the area.
The possibilities really are endless, and it's empowering to think that we don't have to wait for someone else to mix things. You know, we can take initiative and create the change we want to see in our communities.
That's the spirit. And let's not forget about the importance of digital privacy and security. Those are crucial aspects of building a more decentralized and empowering future.
Right. You mentioned those tools like MixNets that can help us protect our online privacy. Are there other things folks can do in that realm?
Absolutely. One of the most important things is simply being aware of how your data is being collected and used. Read privacy policies. Be mindful of what you share online and support companies that prioritize user privacy.
So it's about being informed and making conscious choices about how we interact with the digital world.
Exactly. And there are a growing number of resources and tools available to help people protect their privacy online. It's worth doing a bit of research and finding the ones that work best for you.
That's great advice. This whole conversation has been a real eye-opener for me, and I hope it's been inspiring for our listeners as well.
Me too. The key takeaway here is that the future isn't something that just happens to us. It's something we actively create through our choices and our actions.
And we don't have to wait for some grand revolution to start making a difference. We can start right here, right now in our own communities.
Exactly. Every small step we take, every local initiative we support, every act of conscious consumerism, it all contributes to building a more decentralized, equitable, and empowering future for everyone.
Well said to our listeners in Deer Park, LaPorte, and Pasadena. We challenge you to take these ideas and run with them. Think about the issues you care about most in your community. Think about the skills and resources you have to offer. And think about how you can use these concepts and tools to make a positive impact.
The future is not something that happens to us. It's something we create together.
And if you're enjoying these deep dives and finding value in our show, we invite you to support us at thinkanddactlocally.com/donate.
Every contribution, big or small, helps us continue to provide valuable information and resources to our community.
Thanks for joining us on this journey into agorism and the future of society. Until next time, keep thinking, keep acting, and keep building the world you want to see.